Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 351, being recorded on the 20th of October, 2020, with special guest Asir Selvasingh. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, we have Kale and myself, and of course, our special guest, Asir, who we're going to get to in just a minute on a topic that he's very passionate about in the Java space. But let's just talk about some of the news in Azure this week. Kale, I noticed you put a few links in there you want to talk about.
Yeah, sure. I just have two here this week, and the first one is around the Microsoft Azure Modular Data Center. I think we spoke about this a little bit in some past podcasts, particularly around the Azure Space offering, which provides, you know, satellite connectivity pretty much to anywhere in the world. But basically, this is a good write-up from IGM in Azure Global talking about the modular data center approach. What are some of the key differentiators? Obviously, this is an offering where essentially there's these containers, these modular data centers. I mean, it's exactly what it's described as, can be deployed. And these can be deployed in a way where they're always connected, semi-connected, or even disconnected to some extent. So that's kind of a unique offering. These also, you know, can operate in obviously like rough conditions. They've been kind of like battle hardened. So a bunch of different, you know, kind of climate conditions or, you know, RF kind of shielding, things like that. So there's a lot to these things from an engineering perspective, but definitely something super cool. I mean, this obviously kind of parlays in with the satellite communication option that we talked about before. Apparently these things are ready to go. You can contact Microsoft for these things. Obviously, this is not a small thing. If you're interested in these, I think the blog post actually mentions there's some in early use with the defense and private sector orgs right now. The second one I want to talk about real quick was there's an interesting article about IoT, which we talk about a lot on the podcast here. And you know, one of our program managers is talking about the device security, which is a kind of huge area of focus for Azure. Again, our, you know, platform is there to provide a secure connectivity. You've seen over the years our investment in IoT from device twins and all the different kind of infrastructure components we have there. But this is focused a little bit more on standards. So there's this thing called the Edge Computing Node Protection Profile, which is basically this set of standards that are being developed, again, in the open. And I think these are being contributed back to various orgs like ISO specs and things like that. And this basically walks through some of the specs that are out there. Obviously, as these are open, they're open for contribution. But these are, you know, kind of based on experience and engineering, you know, talent around what we should be doing there from an IoT perspective and the different layers of, you know, down at the raw device level, all the way up through the app solution and, you know, even like a compliance thing for like regulatory needs. So it's a pretty interesting thing for your folks who are into understanding all the different kind of standards that go into making something, you know, basically interoperable, but also like following a set of common criteria that customers can kind of rely on so they know what they're getting. But it's a pretty detailed write-up, so we'll drop the in the show notes, but take a look at it. It's really interesting if you're into IoT security.
Thanks, Kale. Those are great updates. I have just three quick ones here. One is FluentBit is a very popular open source, like a log processor, in like a log framework, and Microsoft and the Azure team has connected with, as a collaborated with them to build an ingestion pipeline that lets you send all the logs to Azure Storage, and then from there from blob to blob storage, and from blob storage They can be, you know, because it's a huge volume of data, they can be ingested into our Azure Data Explorer, and then, you know, can be you can use it to do all sorts of queries and analysis on that. So that's kind of one update on Fluent Bit. And then the two other updates I have on Key Vault. One thing that's really nice is now Key Vault is integrated with EventGrid now. And so if you do Key Vault operations, like maybe creating a secret or deleting a certificate or something like that, you can trigger some events in EventGrid and then do, you know, connect that to Logic Apps and do some sort of workflow that is relevant for that particular event. So that's something new. And then also associated with Key Vault, you know, in the past, Key Vault had two ways of authorizing. You authorize the control plane, and then you authorize the data plane for actual data plane operations like secrets and certificates and whatnot. Now they have integrated that, so you could use RBAC for all of them. So it's a single RBAC policies place where you could say, you know, this person's an operator, they can do operations, or this person's, you know, can do data operations as well. And so there's specific data permissions that are, and roles that are now available that you can assign to directly into Key Vault. So those are the quick updates.
So Gene, is that last one, is that in preview or is that GA?
Is in preview, actually. Thanks for pointing out. Yeah, that is now in preview. And I think it's a good update. It's very, very handy because it's a little confusing right now with Key Vault, you know, kind of managing permissions and whatnot. So this is a nice one place to do all of that.
Cool.
Well, without further ado, let's get on to our special guest, Nasser. Nasser, thank you so much for joining us. Please you know, give our listeners some ideas to what you do at Microsoft and what your passion is, which I know is, but I don't think they do.
So, Sujit, Kale, and Evan, very happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to talk. I'm Nasser Servicing. I'm in Microsoft. I'm on point for everything Java customers need to build, migrate, and scale Java applications on Azure. Today, I'm here to talk about Azure Spring Cloud, as well as Java. I'm also a dev. I started Java in 1995 with JDK 1, and I've been with Java ever since.
Wow. Wow, that is impressive. spread with you over the years on various Java initiatives. I know you love putting Java everywhere on all sorts of Azure resources, app services, AKS, you name it. We've done that. But now, you know, the Spring Cloud thing, I don't know. Can you just give us a quick update as to what exactly is Spring in when it comes to Java? Why did we have to create yet another service, right, to support Java on Azure? I guess that's my fundamental question here.
Okay. So when we talk about Spring, right, Spring has the largest mind share among Java developers. Right? If you look at the most recent state of Spring report that was published about 2 months ago, you would see that about half, three out of five developers, they're all Spring developers, right? And Spring is a pretty large family of modules that helps our developers to easily build applications in the cloud, right? Now, from a Spring point of view, one of the things that you will see that Java developers can use Spring Boot to build anything and get it up and running very quickly. And then when they bring in the Spring Cloud helps the apps to coordinate among these apps. So when we talk about coordination, it helps the developers to bring the Netflix-style distributed computing machinery into the picture, which makes it very easy so that they can build anything very quickly and coordination just gets for free. So when you bring that power to the cloud, it introduces as the strength and the empowerment of the developers that they can build very quickly. Now they have to think about how they can deploy in the cloud in a dynamically scaling way, right? Which is very important. Now, when they start deploying into the cloud, they started thinking about containers, virtual machines. Now, if you are starting from containers and virtual machines, you have to build a dynamically scaling infrastructure. On top of that, you have to start thinking about application life cycles like create, start, stop, deploy your log stream attach or patching, or there are many, many, many things that you could think at the microservice level. And then if you push them a little further, they have to start thinking about wiring them all up for monitoring so that they can troubleshoot, plan capacities, and keep an eye on production, right? So when you think about this, what happened is when we talk to our customers, many of them started building this on containers and virtual machines. And they spent quite a lot of time to build this kind of infrastructure. Now, at the end of the day, what adds value to their business is the Spring Boot apps that represent their business function, not necessarily the infrastructure. If they go and tell their CTO, hey, I kept the virtual machine up and running 24 hours a day. I kept the Kubernetes up and running 24 hours a day. He's like, what are you talking about, right? But if you tell the CTO, we have 5 million users, and each of them are transacting 1 million transactions per day, and they're able to do transaction 24 hours across the globe, then the CTO is pretty interested, right? So you know where the business value is, where there's no business value. This is where leaders like Microsoft, we started thinking about how can we help these customers, our developers? How can we help them reduce this friction so that they can move very fast and they can focus on their business and not necessarily worry about all the infrastructure, dynamic scaling, monitoring, application lifecycle. So this is where how Azure Spring Cloud was born. So Azure Spring Cloud is a fully managed service for Spring Boot apps that lets our developers focus on building and running the apps that run their business without the hassle of managing infrastructure, all the app lifecycle, all the monitoring. So simply all they have to do is, as a Java developer, I build my jars as applications. All I have to do is just deploy them, and Azure Spring Cloud will automatically wire everything to the runtime so that they get dynamic scaling, they get the app lifecycle, and everything, the monitoring is just a breeze. And once they deploy, they can easily monitor their application performance, fix errors, and rapidly improve the application. It's integrated into Azure ecosystem, and it's ready for enterprises whether they want to manage secrets, just like the way you mentioned Key Vault earlier, right? So that zero trust model, like, right? You don't have any secrets inside the code. Everything is taken care of outside, and it's enterprise ready across the board, whether you're logs or security, any aspect that relates to enterprises. About a month and a half ago at SpringOne conference in the first week of September, Microsoft and VMware jointly announced the general availability of the service. I mentioned VMware here. So the service Azure Spring Cloud is jointly built, operated, and supported by Microsoft and VMware so that our customers, our developers can get the best of cloud expertise from Microsoft and the Spring expertise from VMware.
Well, Asir, when I hear you describe this, what I sort of think is, I think when we first launched app services for .NET developers, or we first, you know, when we launched AKS, you know, for Kubernetes folks, this feels like in that similar vein where we're, you know, there's a group of developers, a group of enterprises out there that want to use Spring. And we really want to provide them the ability to say, hey, just all this complicated stuff around setting the environment up and all that, we're going to take away from you so you don't have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Focus on your app. Is that the right way to think about this?
Yeah, I believe so. I think when we started App Service, we were focusing on, hey, we'll wire everything for the web apps. Right? That's one. When we talked about AKS, hey, we'll wire everything up for the Kubernetes. So it's a general purpose containers managed platform. Mm-hmm. Now, when we think of Azure Spring Cloud, it's similar, but the abstraction has moved way higher, right? It has moved higher to Spring Boot app level.
Right. Okay. Where
all you are thinking about is, hey, I'm building a Spring Boot. I just want to give it to you. Microsoft, run it for me in a very general purpose way.
Yeah. Right. So even take it, I think I like to describe it, right? We're moving it further up that stack, right? It's sort of even I remember a chart that I used to show early in the cloud days where, you know, on the bottom left, you have sort of on-premises where it's, you have all the control in the world, but it's super expensive and super complicated. And then on the far right, you have SaaS apps like, you know, Office 365 or something like this. You know, Spring Cloud is a PaaS service, but because we've moved it up the stack, some you're actually even further along that continuum towards the less and less complexity and focus more on your just sort of your core business need and your core business functions rather than the bootstrapping and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, along with that, I just had a question here on a lot of times when I'm working with customers or partners or anyone, and especially if they're non-Azure literate or they're new to Azure, the barrier to entry is the thing there that always like kind of stifles it, right? Because there's all kinds of awesome stuff inside Azure from, like you mentioned, monitoring and security systems with Azure Key Vault, things like that. And a lot of times it's just awareness of like, well, I've just always done it this way before and it works, but I didn't know that that was even an option. So how does this, like when you say, hey, you can just build your jar file and bring it there. So for instance, you mentioned the use case of like maybe some secrets. You don't want to have any of that in your code. From a high level, like thinking about like, hey, if I'm building an app and I say, oh, I know about Azure Key Vault, I can go look at that API and I can figure out how to integrate with it. How does this service like take that friction away or lower that friction?
Let's take the example of Key Vault, right? So when enterprise Java developers bring their Spring applications to the cloud, they used to have practices of packaging all their configuration inside the jar file itself. And that was okay when they were running it inside their on-prem systems, where there were several boundaries, right? Now, when they bring to the cloud, the zero trust model is pretty important, right? Don't trust anybody. Make sure that only the people who need to know, and nobody else. Now, that can be daunting when you come to the cloud, right? You have to deal with Key Vault. And then if you're asked to write code to go and get that data from Key Vault, if you are writing all of those code, it can be very, very challenging. And more importantly, if you have hundreds of applications, you're going to end up writing a library and reusing it or copying the same code again and again everywhere, right? That is not at all desirable, right? And from Microsoft, we have to make sure that enterprise developers see these as benefits. Hey, I can go to the cloud and everything zero trust model. So what we have done is if you take Spring Boot, we have a Spring Boot starter. If you talk about Spring Boot customers, the developers, the way they start is they start from start.spring.io, a page where they can go and select various components, and then they only have to write a small amount of business code, and it all comes together. That's how they're able to quickly build it. So what we did is we implemented a Spring Boot Key Vault secret starter. So all they have to do is add that as a dependency in their application. Once that it is added, it kicks in, right? Now what they have to tell us as part of their configuration is just the URI of the Key Vault where the secrets are, right? And then as Sujit was mentioning, you have to grant access to the managed identity. So each application in Azure has a managed identity. And all you have to do as your chief security officer or your chief operating teams, right? They have to just grant access and then magically, voila, the secrets will be visible with writing zero code. No code needs to be written. All you have to do is add that starter and grant access. Now, you can revoke access anytime you don't want to. Now, here again, your developers need not know the secrets. Your ops team does not need to know the secrets. It's only your chief operating officer and whoever he has confidence into sharing that secret, including the app. So the app, when it loads up, it first thing it does is loads the secret dynamically and doesn't write anywhere other than keep it in memory temporarily to bootstrap the processes. And voila, no secrets anywhere. It'll be like zero trust model so that you have the confidence in your apps as well as in your teams who is operating it.
Yeah, and Esther, on the, I believe there's similar starters for like SQL Server, right? For there are other starters that were created as well, Spring Boot starters to help.
Yeah, I think we actually have a pretty big set The best way to think about is when it comes to Spring, right? Spring is pretty important on Azure. We have to make it easy for Spring developers to interact programmatically with our databases, our messaging system, our cache, our storage, our directories. So if I were to run down a few names here, there is Spring Data, JDBC, JPA, and R2DBC. Using that, you can interact with SQL database, MySQL, Postgres, Maria, Cosmos DB, including Cosmos DB has the MongoDB, Kremlin, Cassandra. All of these, there is a Spring Data module that you can interact with. Now, for the security, when you're turning on enterprise-grade authentication or authorization, you would use Spring Security. And we have a starter for Active Directory. We have a starter for Azure Active Directory B2C. Now, if you're caching, for example, if you're externalizing your sessions or you're dealing with app cache, or if you're enabling search scenarios on a cache, there are Spring modules for that that it can interact with Redis. That way you can connect. Also have Spring Cloud abstractions like the Spring Cloud Stream Binders. So if you're thinking of event hubs as a Kafka stream, or if you're thinking of Service Bus as a message stream, all the magic is implemented in the Spring Cloud Stream Binders for these. All you have to do is pub and sub, and your app will become a sync or a producer to send all these messages. And the other aspect is if you want to send your metrics to Azure Monitor, there's a micrometer module. All you have to do is add the module. The metrics will certainly show up in metrics and logs will show up in Azure Monitor. So there are some magics when we talk about all these Spring on Azure integrations so that developers can easily program against Azure services.
With these starters, what it sounds like, and just to make sure I'm following it, right? I'm able to add these things without really having to write this code myself, right? I'm saying add this dependency, add this module. Mm-hmm. What I think is, as someone who lives on the world of things that are broken, right? Mm-hmm. I joke on the show before, nobody ever talks to me when everything's running fine. It's only when something breaks. But one of the benefits, the starters and everything, is that as we learn a best practice, as we learn, hey, here's a common mistake people make. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't set the preference right on their Cosmos DB, right? You were talking about Cosmos or the region preference, I think it's called, right? Mm-hmm. We can sort of drive that stuff into these starters at that point. Is that sort of, from your perspective, the sort of the long-term maintenance of these starters, the long-term maintenance of the Spring Cloud to drive that stuff in?
There are two drivers. I think the one that you mentioned is as things familiar, turn that into a boilerplate so that customers don't have to repeat, right? The second piece is Spring is a pretty old community, right? They started around 1998-2000 timeframe. So they've been there for a long time, and they have a practice of creating these beautiful, idiomatic, simple interfaces. With that, starters and auto configurations are built underneath it. So okay. When we have released new services, our goal is to make it easy for these developers by implementing these auto configure and starters. I'll tell you one of my starter that I'm working on right now, which is actually a pretty interesting one too. So when developers come to the cloud, securing their messages using TLS and SSL is a pretty important requirement, right? And doing that end-to-end from starting point all the way to the other end, regardless of how many hops you make, right? You want to have that end-to-end TLS SSL turned on. So we are currently working on Azure Key Vault Certificate Spring Boot Starter. All you have to do is add the starter and let us know which key vault it is. If it is a client-side code, all the certificates will be inside your JVM Trust Store. So when the Spring Boot acts as a client,
pulling it automatically. Nice.
It will automatically trust only the certificates that came from the server, from the Azure Key Vault. If you're enabling it as a server, you just tell us which certificate to use. So for all the inbound calls, that certificate will be asked to be used. so that everything will be TLS and SSL enabled. Now, imagine a world without the starter. You have to write all kinds of code to get into the certificates, or you end up packaging your certificates inside a jar file.
And then you miss one.
Then it's like, yeah. There is no trust. Right? Anybody can put it in and start exfiltrating data from your system, right? So this way, ZFS model, all your certificates are sitting in Key Vault. You just tell us where. It'll come, and then it'll be completely trusted communication with using TLS and SSL. You'll see the release coming out very soon. It's already on the GitHub repos.
Great.
Yeah, I was gonna have that's a really small question, but important one for our listeners. So, like, all these components or starters that you're talking about, I assume these are all open source. So anybody who wants to look at it, they don't have to trust Microsoft, but also they can contribute back.
Yes, they can look at the code. It's a completely transparent model. They can contribute. They can open issues as well, right? That way, they get a faster response from our engineering teams.
Awesome.
And Azar, I wanted to ask about just Spring Cloud as a general term, right? I know we call it Azure Spring Cloud, but is Spring Cloud some sort of a standard such that if the customer, let's say, were to want to move to another cloud provider, do they have to change everything, or is this a standard interface that we're building, you know, that so that customers have that thought that, hey, you know, I'm not locked in.
That's a very important one for our enterprise Java developers, right? When they build for Azure Spring Cloud, there isn't anything specific about Azure. Everything is portable. Everything is Spring Boot apps, right? Even if you take any part of Spring Cloud, every part is actually a Spring Boot application. You can run it on your local machine. You can run it on-prem. You can run it in Azure Spring Cloud. You can run it in any other cloud, whether it's Azure, Amazon, or Google. Anywhere you can run it, right? It's a completely portable one. When they bring to Azure, this is Azure Spring Cloud, they don't have to worry about dynamically scaling infrastructure. They don't have to worry about monitoring. They don't have to worry about app lifecycle. And I can keep going on. There's a pretty long list of things that they don't have to worry about. But when it comes to the code, there isn't anything Azure specific. It's just Java and Spring code that can run anywhere. That's a very important tenet for our customers and developers.
And when it comes to operating it, like, you know, you talk about auto scaling, like, you know, there's one of the more advanced cloud features. That's obviously something that would be more specific to the implementation at that point in time. Can you tell us something about those features that are available? You mentioned auto scaling. Does that mean that they could scale up the number of servers in the Spring Cloud cluster? What do you call that thing? The whole environment that you spin up there.
Right. So after you deploy to Azure Spring Cloud, if you take Azure as a whole, right, we do have fundamentals like diagnostic setting is a classic example. It's the same across all services. You're not doing anything specific in your code. You just go to the service and say, I want all my logs and metrics in Azure Monitor Log Analytics, or I want to send it to Splunk, or I want to send it to Elasticsearch, right? So similarly, when it comes to auto scale is a general feature across Azure. If you're familiar with how auto scale is done in App Service, right? You just go there and say, I want it by metrics or I want it by schedule. And I want to drive higher utilization of my resources. I don't want to over-provision. I don't want under-provision. Let's just go by data metrics coming in. Oh, the performance, maybe the CPU time is taken 70% of the time. At this point, I want to scale up to another 5 instances. Or maybe the request count has gone from 3,000 to 5,000. Now I want to scale up by another 2 instances. Or the request count has come down. I want to scale down by maybe 500 instances, right? Or you can ask for 500 instances, you can ask for 300 instances, any number. It can be by schedule or by metrics. Now, here again, you're not doing anything in the code. It's completely in the environment in which this is actually running, right? And we make sure that you don't write anything specific to a specific service in Azure. it must be the same across all of Azure so that once you learn once, you can use it across the board in Azure as well.
So, and this may be a little bit deeper than you were thinking, but can you, I mean, at the end of the day, everything in Azure is a VM to some extent, right? But most services tend to build on top of other services. Can you share just sort of at a high level architecturally, are we, you know, is this built on top of, you know, sort of an app services type implementation? Is it, you know, built on, you know, VM scale sets? I mean, just to kind of give customers a sense of what they should be thinking about as they design their apps for this kind of stuff.
So when they bring their apps to Azure Spring Cloud, the only thing that they have to worry about is thinking of building their jar files as the application, which is the fundamental currency when you're deploying Java applications, right? Now, Azure Spring Cloud is built on Kubernetes. It's built on Kubernetes. Okay. But the beauty here is you don't have to learn or manage Kubernetes. Right. That is the beauty, right? So if I were to give a little more detail here, Azure Spring Cloud is built on Kubernetes. It has each instance of Azure Spring Cloud has two dedicated Kubernetes cluster. One cluster is used for deploying the user apps, and the other cluster is used for running the service runtime. Right? So there are two clusters in it. As you deploy, there gets what Azure Spring Cloud does is it takes the jar files. It is responsible for converting the jars into a container image and storing it into a registry and then deploying to Kubernetes and keeping it up and running, right? So as your apps are running in the user cluster Kubernetes, right, it can talk to any of our Azure services, whether it's data, cache, messaging, or directory. You can secure those apps using Azure Active Directory. You can get your logs, alerts, metrics in Azure Monitor. You can automate your deployments using your favorite tools, whether it's Jenkins, Azure Pipelines, or GitHub Actions, your choice. You can do all of those things, right? Now, when we do all of this, what one of the things that happened there is Microsoft and VMware absorbs all the complexities of deploying this after you give us the jar. And we stand behind that to make sure that you get the full support from Microsoft and VMware, right? So back to, it's built on Kubernetes. As developers, you do not have to learn or manage Kubernetes. That's right. The
beauty. Yeah, but you are sort of leveraging the basic building blocks that, you know, we're investing in, right, from a cloud
perspective. Azure Kubernetes service, Azure storage, Azure container registry, everything, right? And then you push data to Azure Monitor. We open up the RBAC to Azure Active Directory. So it's all building blocks coming, right? That's how we are able to say it's integrated into Azure's ecosystem.
Nice, excellent, great, thanks.
This has been great, Azure. Thank you so much. I know I've been using Spring Cloud. That's how I got connected with Azure internally at Microsoft, and we're using it for a financial services customer. And it's going very well, I can tell you that. So definitely recommend our listeners, take a look at this. So where should our listeners go if they want to try this out? Like, what, you know, is there anything that they should consider to take this for a spin, so to speak?
Yes, I think they may, perhaps after this podcast, we can provide a bunch of links, right? So today, I think everybody with Azure Spring Cloud, everybody can build cloud native application today and advance them to production very quickly, right? So after we provide these links, we'd love to hear how our developers are building impactful solutions out of that. So we have a nice quick start. So a quick start is a great way to take it for a spin. We also have a self-paced training workshop on GitHub today. We can provide that link. And we also have a repo that deploys an existing app, right? So that looks like a line of business app with a bunch of Spring Boot apps talking to our database. So we have done all the magic around it. All the instructions are there. All they have to do is create an instance of Azure Spring Cloud and just deploy them, and the magic will just show up, right? Now, if they are migrating Spring Boot, Spring Cloud, or Tomcat, or any of these apps to Azure Spring Cloud, we have migration guides, right? These are full-fledged step-by-step procedures that they can go to. Now, once they have these apps, They can wire up to interact with all the Azure services that we just talked about. So we have a separate website just showing all these possible interactions, right? So these are all great ways for them to get started. And we always love to hear how they are building impactful solutions for their businesses.
That's awesome. Thank you again for coming on the show and giving us all those details. Appreciate that. I know. Yeah, this is the second time around, right? For you all. Yeah.
We'll have him back in another, 12 months with some other big, huge announcement.
Yep.
Great. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.
Thanks, Sister.